This morning, as we look at the fourth chapter of Hosea, I think you feel like you're reading the Tucson Star, the Tucson Citizen. The description here of Israel at this particular time is just about like the condition in our own country at this time. I think you're going to see a very striking parallel. Hosea's day was a day very similar to the day that we're living in right now. I want us to note carefully what led to that, and you'll have the same answer today. I listened one night, a few minutes, to a newscast, not very long for this, maybe interviewing some PhD, I think, from out the university or somewhere, asking him, what was the cause of all this? What's wrong with it? Well, he attempted a philosophical answer, but he knew he wasn't answering the question at all. He had but one answer. Man had left God out of his thinking. Whenever we leave God out of our lives and out of our thinking, whether it's an individual or a nation, something is consequences are inevitable. I've been thinking a lot about this. Next Sunday I want to preach a couple of sermons. I want to preach on America's religious harvest. What are we sown to reap what we're reaping? Sunday night I want to talk about the responsibility and the obligation of civil government. What is its responsibility to its people? We live through what I consider one of the most, one of the worst weeks in our history, as far as I'm concerned, in which our leadership has shown no leadership whatever. No courage, no conviction, no anything except stand back. Let's don't offend anybody. We might lose a few votes when the election comes up. I want to tell you people, you can't live a lot. You can't live like that. Anyway, I'll talk about that next Sunday morning, my Sunday night. This morning, I want to look at this lesson now. Now, in the first three chapters, which we dealt with the last two Sundays, God told Hosea to marry a woman of whoredom. That is, a woman that was the character of the age in which she was brought up. She was not an immoral woman when he married her. She became one later because of the influence of the society in which she lived. They had three children, Jezreel, Lo Ruhamah, and Lo Ammi. Jezreel meant God will scatter, and also meant God will sow. As you scatter seed and sowing them at that time. Then Lo Ruhamah, without mercy. And Lo Ammi, not my people. Later on, why they be called Jezreel, God has sown. Lo Ruhamah obtained mercy. Ammi, my people. Now I pointed out those passages are quoted in the New Testament. Paul quoted them in Romans 9 and applied them to the Gentiles. You were not my people, now are my people. Peter quoted them and applied them to the Jews, whom God had rejected, and not his people. Now they've come back as his people. So those three chapters, and they will appoint one head, David, and he will lead them, and that was the Christ. I think those three chapters are very, very fundamental chapters to our understanding of some of the things in the New Testament. Now coming to the fourth chapter, now he leaves that, and no more do we mention Gomer and the children and any of those things. Now then, he deals with the nation itself, and I want us to note now what he says about it. And in chapters 4 and 5, he's dealing with the social aspects, the social conditions of the time, and the cause of it was idolatry. In the 7th and 8th, he deals with the political situation. Not also because they rejected God and turned to idolatry. So I think you see some basic fundamental principles in these chapters by which God acts and governs a nation. Well, now looking at it, beginning with verse 1. Hear the word of Jehovah, you children of Israel. For Jehovah hath a controversy with the inhabitants of the land, because there is no truth, nor goodness, nor knowledge of God in the land. Well, a controversy was a lawsuit. Now, Jehovah has a court at law with his people. He's going to bring them to the bar of law and examine and weigh them there. So this controversy, which we call a lawsuit, God's calling them to a lawsuit in which he's going to be the accuser. They will be the defendant in this lawsuit. All right, now here's the reason. Now notice what because there is no truth, nor goodness, nor knowledge of God in the land. How does that fit our country today? Now notice, there is no truth. All right, how much is there? That's relatively speaking, of course. You'll find a little here and yonder, now and then, this and that. But generally speaking, truth is not an honored quality in our nation today. Now, truth is not only in your speech, but truth in conduct, truth in life. I know truth nor goodness. That is respect and a right relation one to another. Proper respect for one another. And third, nor knowledge of God in the land. I know that third is especially true in the world about us. Now, that doesn't mean that there's absolutely no knowledge. That isn't true. There are individuals, always have been, always will be. Even when the Lord comes back, there'll be those who will be changed, caught up to meet the Lord in the air, never be with it. So what he's speaking here then is, generally speaking, in Israel at that time, and I'm talking about the northern 10 tribes now, at that particular time, there was no truth, nor goodness, nor knowledge of God in the land. They rejected all of that. I think you can almost say that of our society today. Think about it, and what I'm challenging you to do today is to think and to weigh the land in which we live, the society, with that back there at that particular time. Now notice what he finds here. There is not but swearing and breaking faith, and killing and stealing and committing adultery. They break out, and blood toucheth blood. That is, one murder follows another murder. I know they break out and blood touches, but let me look at all those again. No, but swearing and breaking faith. That is, they pledge themselves to do a thing, but they immediately break that. They don't keep the covenant or the promise that they have made. Well, we see so much of that in our country today. Now, these are money people and all that. Right now, swearing and breaking faith and killing. Very few nights in Tucson, where there's a murder there. You hear about it the next day on the television, one part of town or the other there, killing, stealing, and committing adultery. Right? Now, killing and stealing. What have we been served on the television all this past week? A riot in Los Angeles, breaking into stores, stealing, taking away that which was not theirs, killing people there. I don't remember how many have been killed now, 40, I guess, the last time I heard. I don't know how many. Now, if the government had had any conviction, whatever, or any responsibility for what they pledged to do, there'd have been a lot more than that. They had a tank go out down the street there, and everybody looting, throwing a rock, and shot him and left him there. That's what a government's for. That's what we're going to talk about next week. I want you to know what the government's for. What's it for? What's its function? What's its purpose? What's it supposed to do? I want the Bible to tell us. That's all I know. I don't know any more than that. I don't know what it said. But my point is, killing here. Are killing one another, or these drug trusts and all that. Constant killing there. Right? And stealing and committing adultery. Well, that's just common in our land today. We know that. Though the home, the foundation of the home is broken down. Adultery is committed by so many people. And we read about it. And like this fellow, one fellow running for president, I don't know how he had a mistress there. His adultery there. But people paying attention to that. It doesn't mean a thing to them anymore, because it's a commonplace. It's just about like it was then. Right? And notice further now, as they break out and blood touches blood, murder follows murder. About like our newspaper, isn't it? Therefore shall the land, now she gets you there for now, but here's the consequence. Therefore shall the land mourn, and everyone that dwelleth therein shall languish with the beasts of the field and the birds of the heavens. Yea, the fishes of the sea also shall be taken away. In other words, that's just strong figure of speech there, that God's going to sweep the land clean. He's going to carry them away into captivity. A lot of them will die, be killed. A lot of them will be carried away into captivity. Right? So that's what's going to happen to them. Therefore, this is the consequence of what they're doing. And God hasn't changed, people. That's what I'm trying to say. Have been for 10 years here. And you, I know you got the point. God doesn't change. What he did back then, he'll do now. And what he hated then, he hates now. I, Jehovah, change not. God doesn't change in principle. God's character doesn't change. What he hated back there, he hates now. What he loved back there with righteousness and all that, he loves now. So God hasn't changed in that respect. Remember that. Move on now. But they shall languish. Those that dwell in the land shall languish with the beasts of the field. That is, things will be back into a primitive state. Be cast back instead of forward. Now, verse 4, yet let no man strive, neither let any man reprove, for thy people are as they that strive with the priest. Now, what was it to strive with the priest? Right, now, notice this next expression. And thou shalt stumble in the day, and the prophet shall also stumble with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. And who is the mother? the mother's the nation. I'm going to destroy the nation because the children of that nation are what they are. And when he said they that strive with the priest, back in Leviticus and Deuteronomy, God gave the priest the responsibility of teaching. They were the teachers of the law. Now, when you strive with a teacher who's teaching the Word of God, who are you striving with? You're striving with God. You're striving against God there. Although, like those that strive with the priest, although they strive with the truth that the priest was supposed to be teaching. This is the point there. Right? Now, I know it further, and that you stumble in the day, and the prophet here stumbled with thee in the night, and I will destroy thy mother. I'll destroy the nation. That's what God did. And this is about 750 to 725. In 722, Samaria fell, and they were carried away into captivity. So within that generation, that was fulfilled. How much long can we last? How much long can we get up and read the newspaper and read the very things here in our own country? I'll tell you how long it lasts. Until the salt is gone. There's still enough salt to preserve it. There's still some righteous people in this country. Haven't all turned this way. But as long as the salt remains. Now, when the generation of individuals who have faith in God and are serving God, when that generation is gone, and the next generation comes on up, they're reared in this present environment, so like these of today, outcome of back in the 60s and 70s there, that rebellious spirit then, now then this is more rebellious. Now then, when this generation is taking place, and the older ones are gone, no salt left, then's when it'll come. I couldn't tell you the year. I can tell you the event, time of it. All right? Notice verse 6. You ought to now have this one memorized. My people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Because thou hast rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, and thou shalt be no more priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I also will forget thy children. What are my people destroyed for lack of knowledge? Knowledge of who? Knowledge of God. Knowledge of what is right. Knowledge of what is wrong. And respect for that. Now, that's what destroyed them. They destroyed them. What's destroying this nation? In the same identical thing. 100 years ago, or a little less, when the humanistic philosophy was accepted in this country, and they began to outlaw all things of a religious nature and spiritual nature. Well, now then, when that came here, began, people now perish for lack of knowledge. The only thing in the world about now, I watched about 2 or 3 minutes of a program last night, which this woman was going to pray, and I don't remember, she quoted the Constitution, or quoted something else. It was leaving the impression there, and it was a correct one, I think, that people don't know how to pray, and the only thing in the world about what prayer is. And but she hadn't got any moral touch anyway, the woman hadn't, it was playing that. We turned it off, we didn't listen to it. But all right, now notice, my people are destroyed for lack of knowledge. Now, because thou hast rejected knowledge. Now, notice what people have done. Well, what have our people done? They have rejected the knowledge of God. You can't even use the name God except in a cuss word in a classroom today. Of course, you can use a cuss word, and that's just fine. But use it with any degree of reverence and respect, no telling what they'll do to you. You combine church and state and that, and all that nonsense. But listen to what we're faced with today, folks. You see an exact parallel today to this nation in decay back there, just before it fell, this nation in which we're living in decay, just before it falls. How long? I don't know. Until the time when there's not enough salt left to save it. And that's gone. And we're gone. All right? Because you rejected knowledge, I will also reject thee, that thou shalt be no priest to me, seeing thou hast forgotten the law of thy God. I also will forget thy children. So the Jews forgot the law of God, were teaching or other things, they were accepting the idols and idolatry and all that, and that's what we're doing. We made an idol out of so many things in this country. We're idolaters too. We worship wealth, we worship social standing, we worship education, we worship all those things. They become the gods of this country. And most preaching today, so much of it in the denominational churches, is along the line of some kind of social deal, but with no regard for God, the blood of Christ, salvation. Now further, I will also forget thy children. As they were multiplied, so they sinned against me. I will change their glory into shame. So the more they increase, the more they sin against God. Don't you see that today? The larger the nation becomes, the more we increase, the more we sin against God. You see that? last week all that destruction took place over there in Los Angeles. God's given us all this. When we go out and destroy this, we're destroying that which belongs to God, because the earth is Jehovah, the world is Jehovah and the fullness thereof, Bible said. And so the earth is Jehovah and the fullness of it. Therefore, that means all these things we have, God gave them to us. God gave them to us. When we destroy them, we're destroying that which belongs to him. Now, no, they, the priests, now, he's still talking about the priests, they feed on the sin of my people and set their heart on their iniquity. That is, the more iniquity, the more sacrifices, the more the priests get, don't you see, out of the situation. All right, you look at your, so many preachers today of religious bodies, what's the main fault in that? The size of the congregation and the money. Not the spiritual and moral power of it, but money and political power and things of that nature. All right? And it shall be like people, like priests. All right? The judgment then, like people, like priests. People becoming like the priests. The priests are going to be like the people then in the consequence of it. What God will send upon the people, priests are going to get the same judgment. Going to come on both classes there. And I will punish them for their ways and requite them their doing. Alright, so the priests then who are responsible for it, and I think our religious leaders over the last 100 years are going to have to take their share of the blame here. All religious bodies, the outcome of the claim Christ in, outcome of the apostasy that took place in the first 2 centuries. All that comes out of the original idea of God in Christ there. Left is, of course, apostatized. But at the same time, it all goes back to that, and God holds them responsible for what they do with and how they treat his truth and his Christ and all these things. They call his name, but they don't mean a thing by it. And they shall eat and not have enough. They shall play the harlot. Now that I said to you the other day, that expression occurs 9 times in this book. The word whoredom occurs 9 times. Play the harlot occurs 9 times. Whoredom was religious whoredom. Play the harlot was religious harlotry. That's what he's talking about, because that led to adultery, literally. But here he's talking about spiritual harlotry. Play the harlot and shall not increase, because they have left off taking heed to Jehovah. That's a marvelous passage of scripture, a whole up to here now, those 10 verses are, in which they describe here a nation in decay that fits so perfectly this nation today. A lot of folks don't recognize it. They don't see that. No, we won't excuse it. Like that mayor over in Los Angeles was excusing the hoodlumism over there and all that destruction. He came on there and tried to excuse that. Excuse it there. Oh, here the background, all this. I don't know what the background is. What it is, what they were doing ought to have been stopped. They're making it what the background of the people were. Why they were angry, what they were angry about. I'm not arguing that. I'm arguing what they're doing. What that's an expression of. It's an expression of utter rejection of God and the principle that God laid down which men shall live. That's what I want us to see. But it moves on. Whoredom and wine and new wine take away the understanding. Right, that whoredom, the spiritual whoredom, wine, that's intoxication with things of the world and literally as well as the other, new wine, take away the understanding. Well, that's right. This fellow from the university there trying to tell him why this all happened. He doesn't have any understanding because he doesn't know anything about God. So he doesn't understand what this is all about and why it's happened. So it all happened because we've taken God out of the thinking of the people. My people ask counsel at their stock, now that's the idol, and their staff declareth unto them, for the spirit of whoredom, as spiritual whoredom now, hath caused them to err, and they have played the harlot, departing from under their God. Right? Now, they ask of the stock, that's the idol, and the rod there. Now, here they'll take a rod and write maybe several of them. They'll write on a certain things, and when they turn them loose, these rods fall in certain directions, and from that they took their cue as to what they should do and what would be right. So here were these rods, and they would fall in a certain direction. Now, that's the way that Nebuchadnezzar, when it came to the parting of the highways up there, and was trying to decide, shall I go in and take Ammonites or go down and take the Jews down here? And so he asked Stock, and he dropped his rod there to tell which way to go, and the rod said, go down to Jerusalem. Well, now, I don't know whether God was directing that, and I probably was. I'm not arguing that, I'm just arguing it's the way that they did that. So instead of asking God, going to God and asking God and turning to Him, they would turn to that stock. Now then you can think about the bank stock if you want to, and the rod there, whatever way the pencil tells them to go there, that's the way they go, don't you see? So it's still a matter of idolatry. Very similar to that. Well, look a little further. Now they played the harlot from departing under their God. They sacrificed upon the tops of the mountains, burn incense upon the hills, under oaks and poplars and terebinths, because the shadow thereof is good. Therefore your daughters play the harlot, and your brides commit adultery. Right, now here we place of idolatrous worship under the, because the shadow was good there. Well, and so here all of these idol shrines over the country there, and so in that there was immorality with it. Where immorality went with the Canaanite religion. Here were women, prostitutes, dedicated as priestesses to the religion. And that was a part of the religion of the Canaanites. It's a very terrible type of religion there. But at any rate, it was a fertility cult. And so here then, this was to encourage the fertility god by this means to bless them with cattle, the children, and all of that. So it's a form of idolatry. And a terrible curse. I used to wonder when I'd read the Bible and when I began studying, why in the world were the Jews, when they went into this land after all God had done for them, why did they turn to those heathen gods there? Well, I think the answer finally dawned on me. I think the answer is twofold. First of all, when they went into that land, they saw all the prosperity of those people as over against theirs just out of slavery coming into the land. So therefore their gods must have been stronger than their God. Must have been more productive. And then second was, here was an appeal to the flesh, an appeal to lust, and that appeal to the people, the men and so on. And so here was a religion that paid off better than the true religion did. And here also was the entertainment, the moral and spiritual gratification of their desires that it allowed and encouraged. So that led them that way. Right now, look at our own country today. What did they give us? Our prosperity. Why? It's our ingenuity, our knowledge, our ability, all of that. We're worshiping the individual. We worship the human mind, the individual. And then second, here also in these in the world here, in this thing, is the gratification of all of the desires of the flesh, whether it be sexual or whether it be power or whatever it may be. And so that appeals to the people and turns them away from God. And at least two of them. You may think of something else to add to that. I know those two. But let me move on now. And those who said in your brides commit adultery, I will not punish your daughter, that is to the extent that I will the men, when they play the harlot, nor your brides when they commit adultery. For the men themselves go apart with harlots, and the sacrifice with the prostitutes, and the people that doth not understand shall be overthrown. And there you see you have these women prostitutes, as priestesses there, and they go and they all sacrifice with the prostitutes. A lot of those religious women dedicated to those false religions there. And that I think is what happened in Moab. You remember when the children of Israel came to Moab, the border of Moab, and the women went out and invited them to come in and worship with them. And you remember how many were slain at that one time? It was 23,000, something like that. All right, of course, what they did there. And that's the thing, it was the appeal there, was a fleshly appeal. And that's what religion is turning to now. It's entertainment. It's entertainment and social activities. That which appeals to the flesh and to the desires of the individual and not to the spiritual life of the individual. I'm not opposed to people enjoying themselves. I'm not opposed to us getting together and having enjoying one another's society. Not that, but that's not what the religion of Christ is. This is what we've got to learn. It's not that. I don't know what builds up these bigger churches in Tucson. I haven't been to them. I don't know what it is. But I'm pretty well persuaded it's not true dedication to the will of God and absolutely doing that will from the heart. I can't believe it's altogether that. And that might be that is part of it. I don't know. So I haven't attended. So I'm not going to pay a judgment. All right. Now notice further. And those that does not understand shall be overthrown. Now, notice those words there. God will tell him what's going to happen. Though thou Israel play the harlot, yet let not Judah offend, as an aside unto Judah. Now remember that Hosea is a prophet up here in Israel, and he's talking to them. But now then he turns an aside to Judah. And he says here, yet let not Judah offend, and come not ye unto Gilgal, neither go up to Beth-Aven, nor swear as Jehovah liveth. Now, this Gilgal, there were two Gilgals. Now, one of them was that the town that they came into when they crossed the Jordan River. The other was another up there. I think it's the one that crossed the Jordan. If that become a center of idolatry, where the men were circumcised, Gilgal, and they rolled back there. And then Beth-Aven was Bethel. Bethel meant house of God. Beth-Aven, house of vanity. So that which had been the house of God was now the house of vanity or idolatry, don't you see? So now it's no longer Beth-El, it's Beth-Aven. Beth-Aven, house of vanity. Well, that's what a large number of the churches of Christ have become. Instead of being churches of Christ, they're churches of vanity. And large buildings, big entertainment programs, and all recreational programs, all of that, which are all right within themselves, to recreate in the home and all that, it's not the function of the church. No longer Beth-El, church or house of God, Beth-Aven, house of vanity. No longer church of Christ, but church of vanity in lots of places. Now, that's not universal, don't misunderstand me. I'm not saying that at all. I'm saying that's true in too many places. I think we all recognize it. They don't, but the person knows the Bible does. Well, all right. He moves on from that now. For Israel had behaved herself stubbornly, like a stubborn heifer that refuses to get into the plow, to pull the plow there, and get in the yoke there with God. Now will Jehovah feed them as a lamb in a large place. What does that mean? That means they're going to be cast out in the unwalled areas. No protection. They'll be cast out here on the prairie, out here on in the wide open spaces there, where the wolves and the lamb out there in the wide open place, subject to the wolves there, and cougars, and whatever else may come along. As a lamb in a large place. Ephraim is joined to idols. Let him alone. Let him alone. Now Ephraim was the tribe from which Jeroboam the first came, who introduced the idolatry that led the people astray as it did. So Ephraim stands for the whole northern 10 tribes of Israel, oftentimes, especially in Hosea. Talking about Ephraim, he's talking about those that gave leadership to the people there that led them astray, going back to Jeroboam the first. When Ephraim is joined to idols, let him alone. There comes a time when you can't do anything with a person to be done. So when a person has gone beyond the point of no return, Jesus said, no need to cast his pearl before swine. Neither give that which is holy to the dogs. So there comes a time, and I think the book of Hebrews teaches that also, that a person who crucified Christ afresh, comes a time beyond which you need not appeal to a person at all. I don't know whether we've reached the point of no return or not. So we still need to keep on appealing. Ephraim is joined already. Their drink is become sour. They play the harlot continually. Her rulers dearly love shame. Her rulers do. That's what it is. You know, righteousness exalteth the nation, but sin is reproached to any people, said Proverbs. Also in the 16th Proverbs there, when it says there, speaks of the rulers there, that, how did that go? Switching right now. Then right there, that, that's a good passage to remember. Let me look at it. Look at that 16th chapter of Proverbs there, and I think it's about verse 14, I think it is. All right, look at it here. 12 it is. It is an abomination to kings to commit wickedness, for the throne is established by righteousness. It's an abomination to kings to do wickedness. The throne is established by righteousness. Well, all right. I don't pay each other on our presidents. I know we had some pretty solid ones up there, morally. Had some pretty good ones up there, morally. So I don't know enough about them. But at any rate, I know what establishes the king, the throne, or establishes the government. It's righteousness. All right, now look next. The wind has wrapped her up in its wings, and they shall be put to shame because of their sacrifices. The wind is wrapped her up in it. What does that mean? Here's a cyclone that's going to carry her away. It was already wrapped up, ready to be delivered on our ground. Is that happening to us? Has it happened? Is it a point of return? Can we still go back? Just don't give up. I often think, when I think about giving up and quitting sometimes, and I never really think about it seriously, I never did do that. But I think about Isaiah in that 6th chapter of Isaiah. When God called Isaiah to come to carry the message of God to the people, I want you to note what he says here. In Isaiah then And Isaiah, I heard the voice of the Lord saying, "Whom shall I send, and who will go for us?" Then I said, "Here am I, send me." And he said, "Go tell this people, hear ye indeed and so on. Make their heart." Then he asked this question, verse 11. Then said I, "How long, Lord, how long?" And he answered, "Unto a city be waste without inhabitants, and houses without man, and the land become utterly waste, and Jehovah have removed men far away, and the forsaken places be many in the midst of the land." That's verse 11, chapter 6. How long, O Lord? You know, that question occurs so often. How long? God doesn't answer most of them. The answer I say, how long? "Unto the whole land is laid waste, and the people are carried into captivity. Even though the thing falls, you keep preaching." And now that's our responsibility today. Doesn't mean how it looks. Keep on preaching. Get down to 6 or 8 like we are here. Or if you got 1,000, it doesn't make any difference. Just keep on preaching. That's what God says here. You just stay with it, Isaiah. All right. Let me move into this next chapter just briefly. Continue the same thing. "Hear this, all ye priests." Now you see, you hold these priests responsible. People have wondered, possibly Hosea was not a priest, because he has so much to say about the priesthood. I don't know whether he was or not. "Hear this, O ye priests, and hearken, O house of Israel, and give ear, O house of the king, for unto you pertaineth the judgment. For you have been a snare at Mizpah, and a net spread upon Tabor." Mizpah was on the east side of the Jordan. Tabor was on the west side of the Jordan. All the way from the east to the west, you've been a snare, all that. Now, who's he talking to? You priests, and O house of the king. The king, the kings, and the priests had been primarily responsible for leading them astray. But I think our government and our religious leaders of today, of this nation, they're the ones that have done so much to lead the nation to destruction. They haven't stood for what is right. They haven't stood against what was wrong. And so here we are, and I thank God we'll hold the rulers and the priests, the preachers of the country, more responsible than maybe anybody else. I used to make the statement there'll be more priests and preachers in hell proportion to the number than any other class of people, and I still think that that's probable. Still think that's probable. More priests and preachers in hell in proportion to the number of them than any other class of people. Why? Because they led people astray. They didn't stand for what was right. Partly responsible. Well, the kings will be right along there with them. The kings were more interested in that vote and the political power than they were in directing the nation the right way. Righteousness exalts the nation. Instead of leading like that, and righteousness establishes the throne. Wickedness is a reproach on any government. Why, we haven't done that. Am I a little too severe now? Is that too severe? Or is it? I don't think so. I think you've been studying things, studying your Bible, studying the conditions and what led to it. I think you'll say that's right. Amen. That's correct. All right. Moving on now, I'm going to finish this paragraph. And he goes on to say, "For you have been a snare at Mizpah, that's the places of idolatry. And the revolters are gone deep in making slaughter. But I am a rebuker of them all." Who's a rebuker? God is. I'm the rebuker of them all. "I know Ephraim and Israel is not hid from me. For now, O Ephraim, thou hast played the harlot. Israel is defiled." Ephraim, representing the leaders, the head of the nation, it and the people of the nation itself, they're all defiled. They played the spiritual harlot. That's what our nation has done. Played the spiritual. I know what people of God to start with. I know that. But I know that God, the ruler of all nations now, the old king of the nations, Jeremiah said, the old king of the nations, their doings will not suffer them to turn unto their God. For the spirit of whoredom is within them, and they know not Jehovah. So the point there is then that they don't know Jehovah, and so they're not going to listen. And the spirit of whoredom is in them. So you see, it's the spirit that you've got to change. When politicians tell you, what are we going to do? We're not going to do anything. You're not going to do anything, my people, till we change the spirit and the heart of the people of this country. And you don't do that by political laws. We do that by the Word of God. That's our job. I've used illustrations many times in my preaching. Go to the board and draw a tree. Here's a tree. Here's the fruit of that tree. Here are the roots down going this direction. Civil government works on the fruit. Christian works on the root. We work on the root of crime and leave the fruit of it to the civil government. Now, when the civil government failed to cut off the fruit, and the Christians refused or failed to work on the root, which is the heart, then what's the consequence? Just exactly what we've got today. And what we're going to have a little bit later in a little more severe form. Right now, Jonah is within them, and they know not Jehovah. And the pride of Israel doth testify to his face. And I think that's Jehovah, who should have been that pride, testifies to that face. As he's talking about that pride in what they've done, an idolatry, well, that testifies against them too. But I don't know for sure which that is, but I think it's Jehovah. Therefore Israel and Ephraim shall stumble in their iniquity. Judah also shall stumble with them. We know that Judah's not going to change. They'll stumble also. They shall go with their flocks and with their herds to seek Jehovah. They shall not find him. He hath withdrawn himself from them. Now remember when they left Egypt, they said we'll carry our flocks and our herds with them. We want to go out in the wilderness and worship Jehovah, sacrifice to Jehovah. Well, they went out into the wilderness, they found Jehovah, worshiped Jehovah, he was there. But now then he says, you're going to take the flocks and the herds, they're going to try to find me. You won't be able to find me this time. Because there comes a time, God gives them up and says, this is it. It's now time for judgment. There's a time for mercy, there's a time for redemption and salvation. Then comes the day of judgment. When the day of judgment comes, and like Jonah prayed in the belly of that whale, that fish there, Old Jehovah, remember mercy. Time of judgment, remember mercy. That's all we'll be able to pray for. Now, whether it's showing or not, that'll be a different thing. Moving back to this now, all who stumble with him, they shall go try to find God, but they won't be there. They have dealt treacherously against Jehovah, for they have borne strange children, that is, children of idolatry. Now shall the new moon devour them with their field, and the sacrifices and all of that, worshiping that, all that's going to devour you now because of your transgression of the law, your failure to do what is right. Now the time of judgment is coming. Well, I don't have time to go into this next paragraph there, so I'm going to leave it right there. But I want you to think of what this prophet is saying. Now, here was God is the father, Israel is the mother, children are the early saints did against the Roman Empire, and all the teaching meeting it was, and I'd call it an evangelistic meeting anyway, but he always had some of that in there. But anyway, my point is, I think we just missed God's way of doing things, and you can't improve on his way. Well, we'll leave that lesson with you a minute or two ahead of time. You got any questions? Maybe you got a question. Maybe you got something you want to say. Speak up. This is open meeting as far as I'm concerned. It takes an awful good teacher to satisfy everybody's question, doesn't it? And when you get through and haven't got a question left, well, that's a good teacher. Either that or so sorry. it didn't stand the way of a question, one or the other. You can take it either way you want to. Okay, let's start with that paragraph. Start with verse 8 next time. Class excuse.